Blog Talk Radio.
I know the world is round, half of it's upside down, but drowning in the tears of fools, and I don't know what I'd do without you, and I don't know what I'd do without you. We think it's all run down, the story's all
to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is Independent Music Showcase, July the 29th, 2020. My special guest tonight is Mike Tittle. And Mike has been on the show before, but it's great to have you back, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to hear your music. I mean, we talked a little bit off mic and about this is 2020, and we're going to be able to chronicle our lives through this show. People can go in 20 years from now, Mike, they can listen to this and think, whoa, that was during the great pandemic of 2020. And it's one of those things where you try to wrap your mind around it and you kind of try to find a place of comfort where you're thinking, it can't be that bad. But it really is kind of rough. But what we want to talk about tonight is your first solo album. It's you got 12 songs. It's called Sleeping In. It's amazing. I love it. I listen to
Thank
it.
You.
And you're a very talented songwriter. Man, you can play any instrument. It's just incredible. It's great to know you and great to have you on. I just want to talk about Okay, so one of the things with me, I've been doing this show since 2008, and recently a few people that I've known that were I've interviewed in the past, and I don't want to get morose or anything, but have passed away that I've had on the show, and I've gone back and listened to their interviews, and I've it's like this mystical, weird thing that, oh, that's me, you know, talking to these wonderful people about their music. And to me, the thing that's gotten me through this is music. And is my love for music.
Yeah.
And I collect vinyl, and I like sit at the door, my looking for the FedEx guy to bring my records. I'm that guy. Oh, look, you know, he's 2 hours late. But what we want to talk about is your songwriting. I mean, the album is great. So I want people to know that they can, what's the best website for them to go to? Would it be newsincerityworks.com?
Yeah, that's the best way. If you want to purchase it, if you want the download, or you want, if you're still listening to CDs, you can get the CD. It's not out on vinyl, and probably won't be unless there's, you know, more interest in it. But it's also on all the streaming sites as well. So, you know, I'm fine with either method. Stream it on Spotify and whatnot, or buy it. I just want people to listen to it.
Yeah, and that's really cool. Talk about the inception, how it started, how the whole thing started out. Did you write all the songs during the pandemic, during the COVID-19 part, or was there some before that? How did you start off with this concept?
Yeah, well, the chronology of it all is a little strange. So I think the last New Sincerity Works record, the one that you interviewed me on, that came out, I believe, in 2017. And that, following that record, at some point, and I can't remember how long after that record, I started writing again. And I typically, for some strange reason, whenever I buy a new acoustic guitar, I like suddenly like have all these new songs that come out. And I think it's just because I maybe hear new things in a guitar, and that's how I write. But anyway, I wrote a whole bunch of songs, the majority of which went to a New Sincerity Works record that has not been put out yet.
Okay.
And so I worked on that for about a year. And then about midway through that, when I was almost finished with that record, I think it laddered up to Wintertime. And Wintertime is super creative time for me because I love to hunker down in my home, which, of course, in past winters, that was a real novelty. Of course, now we're hunkered down full time, so it's a little different. But I went through one winter where I read some article. I think it was like Ryan Adams or someone, some songwriter, that they had done this thing where they sat down at the same time every day and tried to write a complete song, and that was kind of an alien concept for me. So I did that off and on across a couple months of winter. And I believe this was the winter of 2018. And I basically sat down in the early morning hours. And I'm talking like really early, often before I would go to my day job. So I'd get up really early and I'd try to write one complete song. And a lot of them were obviously not good songs. And I knew they were kind of bad as I was working on them, but my goal was always to try to finish something. So anyway, I did all that, and I had probably 20 songs from that process. And then several months went by, and with the New Sincerity Works album still being mixed, I just kind of got antsy. So it was the tail end. It was like after Thanksgiving of 2019. I just decided to go into my studio and just document all these songs that I had written over the winter. And I was mainly just trying to get them down so that I wouldn't forget them, because I get a little OCD on trying to remember songs, and I'm not really a guitar player or a musician, other than I think I'm a pretty good drummer. So I have to notate things in very intricate ways so I can remember them. So long story short, I just went in the studio and I just started tracking these songs, kind of starting with drums and just building them with instruments. And it wasn't too far into that when I just started to think, well, I should just put a record out. And then it became a race of, is my solo record going to get done, or is the new Sincerity Works record going to get done? Because I'm a one-man show as far as promotion, and I didn't want to do them both at the same time. So long story short, the new Sincerity Works album should be out this fall. And then since my studio was empty because of the quarantine and whatnot, I basically got my partner, Mike Landis, to give me a tutorial on how to mix. And I kind of went down there during the quarantine and I finished the solo record and mixed it myself, which was kind of a learning experience. And then I just decided to put the record out. So that's a really long story, but that's kind of how the whole thing unfolded. And also how that when the new Sincerity record is released in the fall, those songs are actually older than my solo record songs by a year or two.
So when you're writing the songs, and is there any like separation between your solo work and the new Sincerity stuff?
Well, I don't think so. I think there's three outlets now. We have an acoustic kind of leaning band called Pretty Birds. There's New Sincerity Works, which is the 6-piece rock thing, and then the solo record. So I actually feel like, I mean, it's ridiculous maybe to have those three outlets, and certainly confusing and not good branding, but it's nice to have three very different outlets to put songs into.
Right.
And I think for me, the solo record was almost gave me permission to, in my mind, just not worry about the songs that much. I mean, I of course worry about them and want them to be good, and I want the arrangements and the recording and everything to be as good as I can do. But I was also keenly aware that, like, within these 12 songs, there are maybe deficiencies in pace or energy or things like that. And it was a bit liberating to not have to worry about what other people, specifically people that I play with or work with records on. Like, I didn't have to really worry too much about what they would think of things, or I really didn't even care, so to speak, about it, other than just pleasing myself. So that was very liberating. I think a couple of these songs could have been new Sincerity Work songs, but I also think, again, going back to the freedom to write what you feel and write what you want, I didn't really self-edit very much on this record. Some of the songs are probably too long. They could have been done better with a band. Hard to say. Well, actually, I think a few of them probably would be good band songs. But kind of, I think just the freedom, the mental freedom that I'm putting my name on it, so it can be whatever I want it to be.
That's really a good point. I mean, that's something I've been thinking about, because you're an artist, and when you create art, it's yours. And if you collaborate with other people, then it's theirs and yours. It's a joint thing. And when you're making something, whether it's music or, you know, photography, or whether it's art, or you're drawing or sketching or whatever you're doing, you know, it's hard sometimes to just be honest and do what you want to do, because you're thinking, is this going to be accepted? You know, is somebody going to like this? Is this going to be something that people are going to think, oh, that's pretty good? Or, gosh, that's crazy. Do you ever struggle with that to the point where you're thinking, okay, I look back at like some of the, like Dylan and Hendrix and some of these people that were doing things that I know were blowing everyone's mind because they were thinking, this isn't going to sell records, guys. What are you doing? You got to be more like this, you know, you got to get back in the box. And do you think that, Mike, when you're writing, is it like sometimes you're thinking, you know what? I have my sound. I want to stay within my sound. And I bring in musicians that will help me be there. But what if I just let it all out? You know, just, hey, let's see what I got. And if people like it, fine. If they don't, then you mentioned earlier that, you know, you're just there when you're doing things on your own. And gosh, you're doing the recording and the instruments and the mixing and everything, that you basically just have to please yourself. And when you think, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm liberated, I think, on a whole other level of kind of artistic freedom, if you will, because I don't depend on this for my career. Which, you know, when I was in my 20s, you know, that was, I would say, a little bit of a life upset was the realization that I didn't quite have, I would say, the stamina to stay in the game long enough to try to make a go out of it. The flip side to that is that, you know, I'm afforded a certain amount of money to put into my record and, you know, to build a little studio and to buy a couple guitars and do, you know, do everything but, you know, make tons of money at it. And I feel pretty lucky. I mean, the thing that I don't have a lot of is time. And that's, over the past, you know, two decades, that's been my creative tension and my struggle is how do I get stuff done? So to your original question, my answer would simply be, I think for the most part, I have a strange over-indexing on self-esteem and confidence that I blame on my mother. But at the end of the day, I think I lean towards not caring what people think. Now, however, when I put music out and I don't get compliments or I don't hear feedback or I don't hear people telling me how they feel about my music, it does bum me out. Because, you know, once I'm through with what I get out of it, which is the rush of writing songs and the creative journey and going to new destinations and all that kind of creative stuff, once I'm kind of burned out on the songs and they are what they are, that's when I want a little bit of reflection back from people saying, and so all to say, I'm in the camp of like just doing whatever I feel like doing. And, you know, my handful of supporters seem to like what I do. So it's working out.
You know, you hit on some pretty cool things there. I mean, it's like, gosh, I've interviewed people, Mike, that the difference between what you were saying and what you said about if you depended on it, you know, to make money for your family. I mean, if that's what you did to provide money for your kids and your family and for yourself and to pay the rent and to keep your car, that's a whole nother pressure. And it's, I'm not saying it's good or bad. It can be both. It can be good and bad. But I think that when you have that freedom to be able to say, you know, I don't have to write a hit record or I don't have to get, you know, play 7 nights a week or 8 nights a week, you know, a little Beatle thing there. You have that ability to just say, you know what, I'm going to do my thing and I don't really care if a record company likes it or not. And I don't really care if anybody is into it because this is exclusive. This is me. You know, if you like it, cool. If you don't, I'm not going to sound like, you know, Sting or you know, whatever, to just get people to understand it. Because don't you think that's kind of hard to do sometimes anyway, if you're trying to get your creative things that you create for somebody to understand it? I mean, it's like, some people will, and a lot of people won't. And it's like,
you write a song
and it's like, no, that's not what I, and they come back and say, oh, that sounds like Kansas. And you think, no, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Music is fast. I mean, creative endeavors and art, it's all interesting. Music, I think, is just particularly interesting because I think I have kind of a theory that there are more like emotional relationships with music than any other art form. I have no empirical evidence to support that, but I think that we all can close our eyes and listen to a song and be struck emotionally by it in one way or another. And, you know, music triggers memories. Music is like so powerful, and its success is so subjective that I'm pretty much of the camp that like, I just feel lucky to like be in love with music the way I have my whole life. And when
that's a great point.
You know, when people get something out of a song that I've written or a record or whatever, like, it's such an honor to me for anyone to relate to it in that way. So I think it's like just a special thing. I think like it's always interesting to hear people's, how they get their head around a song or how they relate your music to the rest of the world. And I like hearing all the goofy analogies of like, oh, you know, that song sounds like Wilco, or I hear Wings, or whatever people come up with. It's really fun to me. I had recently I had someone review the record, and they were in the Facebook group of a band that I was a touring member of in the 90s. Called the Loud Family, and the interviewer came like right out of the interview and just said how much my songs reminded her of that band and the songwriter in that band. And I had never once in a million years heard anything like the Loud Family in any of my music. And she had all these specific things she was mentioning. It was just so interesting. And I think like, I'm not saying it wasn't true, or, you know, maybe I just had overlooked the way I sound, but my point in mentioning it is I think she brought her perspective to the music and saw it through that lens. And it's just interesting.
Yeah, it really is, because I think that there are people that it has to go back to something. It's like, oh, this sounds like this,
yep,
or this sounds like that.
Yep.
And to me, it's like, yeah, I get that. I really do, because there are bands that have built every ounce of what they do on sounding like the Beatles, or, you know, sounding like Elvis Costello or something like that. And it's pretty hard to do that. But, you know, I thought, Mike, okay, so if you do that, what are you going to sound like? You're going to sound like somebody that's already done it. I mean, the best you could do would be to sound like the Beatles or sound like Elvis or whatever. And I think that's why, you know, I'm like, you and I have talked about, you know, our love for music. And to me, it's like I've used the analogy of standing at the foot of the ocean and looking out at it and not seeing an end and not seeing a beginning and just seeing this incredible mass. And that's what I think about music. It's the thing that excites me is the fact that there are chords that have never been played. There are chord changes that have never been played. There's Michelle.
Yeah.
There's Yesterday's. There's all those songs are still out there, you know, that somebody's going to, one of these days, man, they're going to hook it, you know, and bring it in. And that is so exciting to me to be able to do that. My guest tonight is Mike Tittle, and you can go on newsincerityworks.com and purchase the files, the downloads for his new album. It's 12 songs. It's called Sleeping In, Where did you get the name Sleeping In, Mike?
Sleeping In ended up being a song on the record, but I think more importantly, the way the album was wrote, as I described earlier, you know, for the most part, I would wake up really early before kind of the rest of my life had to get rolling. So I'm talking sometimes maybe 4:35 in the morning. Mm. And I would write these songs, and especially on the weekends, you know, I might go from 5 a.m. till 10 or 11 when the rest of my family would, you know, start stirring. So, you know, the idea of sleeping in, I mean, I guess it could literally be like I was working in this house while everyone was sleeping in. But I think also there was a little bit of magic for me in the songwriting process, which was, I think it was so early that I wasn't wide awake. And there was this feeling that I was, you know, it was dark outside. I was at the kitchen table. I had this very rigid routine that I did every morning. And I think it was almost this idea. I was almost in like a meditative dream state, if you will, for that portion of the morning. So anyway, that's kind of what Sleeping In became. And then the other layer to it is the song Sleeping In, which, you know, has a little bit to do with kind of what I was referencing and just, you know, choosing a certain path in your life and, you know, wondering if it's the right path, or maybe not wondering if it's the right path, but just almost being okay with the fact that you chose a series of routes on your journey and you ended up in a place. And you're finally okay with it. And that's a little bit about what Sleeping In the song was about. So I think all that stuff just came together, and that's kind of became the theme of the record. The other theme, I guess, is like the COVID quarantine thing where everyone's hunkered down in their homes. And, you know, this, I think I had the album cover before, the quarantine, but the album cover, if you get the CD or go online and see it, the album cover is a picture of a house through woods and in fog and early morning fog. So, you know, it kind of all connects, I guess.
Let's play the song. This is Sleeping In. Mike Tittle is my guest tonight on John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase. This is July 29, 2020. And this is the title track from his album. We'll be right back after this.
Listen up, the song that we'll carry.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase. My guest tonight is Mike Tittle, and we're talking about and playing music from his debut solo album, Sleeping In. We just heard the title track. Now, Mike, one thing with your music that I've noticed, and I don't know if this will sound right or not, but your lyrics fit so good with the music. And sometimes to me, it seems like someone writes a song and they'll write the lyrics and try to fit music with it, or they'll write music and try to fit lyrics with it. And your music and the lyrics just fit. I mean, they like flow together. So, and I say that as a compliment, because I know that can't be an easy thing to do, because it's like one might overshadow the other in some songs. So what's your process in writing? Is it lyric first? Maybe a lot of people will say they'll like, you know, do a lick on the guitar and just go from there. How does it work with you?
Well, thanks for the compliment. I think in kind of a cool, maybe a cool midlife awareness, I'm keenly aware of like the things that I don't do well, or maybe better stated, my limitations. I'm pretty limited overall musically. I have kind of a low opinion of my voice. I've taken vocal lessons. I've tried to be better. I'm taking guitar lessons. I'm trying to get better. But at the end of the day, I'm not a super great guitar player. I'm not a super great singer. And as much as I wanted to change what I could do, I think I've just realized that, like, no matter what I do, no matter how proficient I become, in the end, I always just sound like myself. And the thing that I realized in that process of being comfortable with my limitations is I started to realize, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, but, you know, I think like 90% of the world of music and the people that are professional, you know, I think they're really good. Like they're really accomplished musicians. They sound incredible. There's so many good bands. There's so many good artists, so many good songwriters, so many good singers. But I think the ones for me that connect with me are the ones that sound incredibly original, and probably in being original, they probably sound very different or very left of center. So, you know, you talk about people like, you know, like it, just some common examples, Bob Dylan's vocal, or, you know, Jonathan Richman, or, you know, all these artists. Now, of course, Dylan became a huge, iconic performer and songwriter, but a lot of the people I listen to, you know, most people haven't heard of. So long story short, when I write, I could probably write starting from music. I could probably just go record interesting music and then try to put lyrics on it. But I find it easiest to just get a guitar, play very simple chords, but maybe put the chords together in a way that resonates with kind of what I'm feeling. And then I start immediately with trying to connect a melody to the whole thing. And usually what works best for me is if I have either a starting line, like a starting lyric, which can be literally something as simple as, you know, I walked into the room. That's not very interesting, but typically I would try to find something more interesting. I just start with that and I just let it flow, and that's how I write. So I think your assessment of the lyrics always working well with the melody and the music is probably just because I'm really a melody first songwriter. I actually don't think of guitar parts. I don't think of drums. I don't think of anything beyond is the melody, like, connecting to me, and are the lyrics interesting but also like open enough that people can interpret them? And I think if I've achieved that, then I take it to the next level of like, okay, let's figure out what kind of song this could be.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. It's like I like Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and Jimmy Dale Gilmore is one of those guys that when I tell people about him, they listen to his voice, and a lot of people just think, oh my God, that's like awful. But you have to, when you listen to him, Mike, it's like this thing coming right from his heart, his songs. They tell a story. It's not like he's BSing anybody. It's like, this is, you know, I actually did this. This is, and you feel that and you get caught up in that. And his voice then becomes, although it may not be the greatest voice in the world, it becomes very, very listenable. And you start thinking, man, I wish I could sing like that. But mm-hmm. it's because if he's doing it, it's authentic. I think that's what you said earlier. You know, it's real.
Yeah.
It's something that really happens. Towns Van Zandt, you know, those guys that just sit down in a place in Texas and start singing, and, you know, people throwing beer bottles and all, it didn't matter. It wasn't about anything but the song. That's all it was about. And it meant so much to them. And I think that's what I get from your music is like, you know, you're in it for the real reason. And, if you know, we do have a pretty decent listening base, and I just want people to, you know, go out and purchase your music. And I think it's so important, Mike, right now for people to understand that independent musicians really need that. You don't do it for the money, but, you know, it's not free, and things that you have to do cost money. So, I just encourage people to go out on newsincerityworks.com and purchase what you can. And I think, Mike, you have some merchandise out there. And just for people to support independent musicians that are creating great music. So really appreciate what you're doing. Yeah. And so we started off the show with Own Your Own Dealings, and we didn't get to talk about that. Would you like to talk about that before I play another song?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That song, that was one of the ones that almost didn't make it on the record just because I didn't think it was as maybe uniquely original song as some of the other ones, but most of the songs on the record, I played all the instruments. It was kind of like one of the, you know, like a one man band type record. But you know, my partner Lauren, she sings on quite a few of the songs. We really like singing together, and you know, we're having a lot of fun doing that. She's on it, and specifically on Own Your Own Dealings, a pal of mine was in town and really, to be honest, insisted on playing on a tune. So I pulled up a song that I thought probably wasn't going to be on the record, thinking that, well, I'll let him have that one that's not going to make it. Because part of me, in some kind of selfish way, wanted this to be a true solo record.
Yeah, I totally get that.
But it was we had a 12 string electric sitting in the studio, and he hooked that up and put a insane amount of compression on it before it got to the amp and kind of created this sound. And we tracked it, and it just brought the song to life. So then I had Greg Tudor, who plays drums live with New Sincerity Works. He's a great bass player. He plays with Roger Klug and I when we do the Roger Klug Power Trio. So I had Greg come in and play bass on it. And again, bringing him in on bass, it just turned into kind of this dance groove tune. And so anyway, it made the record. The song, I think, is my reaction to all the politics and things. I don't go about politics. I'm not a super black and white person. I believe in black and white and all the grays in between. But I think we're all at a point where everybody's got to really look at, you know, what they really believe in and question where their beliefs came from in the first place, and are the do the beliefs align with truth? And that was really what inspired that song. So that's kind of what the song is about. And it's probably as political as I'll ever get, and so therefore not very political, but that's what's embedded behind those words.
Did the lyrics come first, Mike, or did the song, the melody?
I think it all unfolded the same way. I mean,
oh, cool.
You know, yeah, most of my tunes are, you know, probably in the range of three to five chords, and I like it that way. I like keeping the chord structure simple and then moving the melody around. And so, yeah, I think I was literally sitting at the kitchen table, probably playing G, C, D, or E, A, B. I'm not sure which it is. And the line probably, the first line of the song just came out, you know.
Mm.
So I know the world is round, half of it's upside down, a drown in the tears of fools, but I don't know what I'd do without you. So it was kind of, I think that's just what came out, and I finished it pretty quickly. So yeah, anyway.
That's cool. I like that. Let's play a song that was one of my favorite on the album, is Brimstone and Bone. And we'll play that. And would you like to set that up?
Yeah. Let's see if I can be quick about it, cause I talk a lot. But this is John Talk Radio. So I guess
this is a talk show. Yeah.
It is a talk show. So Brimstone and Bone, is one of my favorites on the record. Probably the most melody and chord structure. I think there's three chords in this song, but what is behind it is, and I'm sure you saw the fantastic documentary on PBS, the country music, the Ken Burns series.
I haven't seen that. I didn't
okay.
see that.
Okay. Well, as a music fan, you should definitely check it out when you have a chance. Anyway, there were every night I watched this thing, there were like 20 unbelievable stories embedded as they kind of walked through about 100 years of country music. And one of the stories that they unpacked was Sarah Carter of the Carter family broadcasting over a Texas radio station, a kind of cryptic love message to her person she was in love with named Coy Bays. And he was thousands of miles away. And it was kind of this amazing country music love story. And the next day, over the course of a weekend, I just sat down and wrote the song, not knowing what I was writing. And it kind of just started to form into that narrative. And once I figured out, oh, this is that story I heard on that documentary, I was able to finish the song. So that's kind of what it is. I mean, at a high level, it's kind of it turned into a really emotional little weird country tune. It's country at its core, but it's messed up enough that it's got a lot of weirdness to it that you'll hear. The other thing I would point out is Lauren and I have been performing this live. We've done a couple of live streams from our house, and that tune is one of our favorites to play. We slow it down. It's got a really repetitive kind of guitar chord thing, and we're both singing on it, and it's just a really, it's almost like it becomes a ballad. So I think it's an interesting tune, and I'm glad you're playing it.
Let's play it. This is Brimstone and Bone, Mike Tittle, from his latest release, actually his debut solo album, Sleeping In. And we'll be right back with the interview with Mike right after this.
All the world at war. Kingston to the Texas shore.
And we're back with Mike Tittle on John Talk Radio, Independent Music Showcase, July 29th, 2020. We're talking about Mike's debut solo album, Sleeping In. We just played Brimstone and Bone. What a cool song. So I got to ask you, Mike, you're welcome. I got to ask you about your videos that you put together. I mean, I think, is it easy for you to do that? Is it difficult because when you write a song, that's your song and you know what it means and you know what you want people to get from it. When you put a video out, then it's a different medium and it might make people think about the song the way you want them to. I don't know if that makes any sense, but instead of them coming up with their own interpretation. So how do you come up with the video and how do you do that? Because your videos are amazing.
Well, thanks. It's the proverbial struggle with video. I mean, you remember when MTV came out and all the rock people were having to make videos and no one knew what to do.
Right.
It was like,
right.
And then you had people like David Byrne who kind of, they basically, they were artistic. Like David Byrne was already an artist. I mean, he went to art school. So I think he was able to translate, video is a different medium. I'm going to do something interesting with it. And people like that kind of thrived on it. And then there were people that just despised them. I think for me, for one thing, to get, now for anyone to pay any attention to anything, you just seem to have to do everything that you can to get attention, and video is one of those things you must have. For me, it's more of just a pain in the butt. It's less like that I have any specific opinion of them. I mean, I want them to be interesting. I did a video for Own Your Own Dealing that it makes me laugh every time I see it, which is unusual because my songs I don't think are funny, but I thought the video was just made me laugh. So I think on this record, I just took the position of, is it possible for me to make a video that is somehow entertaining and don't really get caught up in what the video, the meaning of the video is, or what the images are communicating. Like the video for Brimstone and Bone, I think was really successful because I didn't really try to do anything with a video narrative. I didn't try to tell a story other than I wanted to make it very moody. You know, I was a photographer for 10 years when I was younger, and I'm a visual designer, and visuals have always been kind of my go-to art form. So the video stuff technically is not daunting to me. It's pretty easy to throw stuff together, and it doesn't take me long at all. But to your original question and point, I do think I think the purity of music, I mean, I think the ultimate way to experience this record would be to sit in a somewhat dark room with a great pair of headphones and just listen to the songs and maybe have a bourbon nearby. And that's the best. And the videos are a little bit to me like a distraction, although, you know, they can certainly be innovative and interesting, you know?
Oh yeah. And they are. Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I always enjoy talking to you. Your music is great. I wish you the very best. I know that if this pandemic keeps going, man, just keep writing songs, and because we love it. And is there anything you'd like to say in closing? Anything maybe I missed on, or any new projects or things in the future?
No. Well, the new Sincerity Works record will be coming out. I will be certain to get that to you. I think you will like it. But the only thing we missed was me thanking you for doing this show and interviewing artists and musicians and people that are out here doing what we love, because having people like you, you know, promoting us, it makes all the difference in the world. So thanks for everything. And I will say to you, hang in there. We will get through this stuff and keep doing what you're doing as well.
Well, thank you, Mike. That's a nice thing to say. And, yeah, it's a freaky thing. It's weird. I'm like, I've always been like a person that can sleep through anything. And my wife, it kind of ticks her off a little bit because I'm like, I'm dead. But during this pandemic, that hasn't been the case. And it's just been a kind of a weird thing. When you talked about getting up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm up, and I'm not stressed out or anything. I'm just up, and I'm thinking, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do.
Yeah,
more conscious
there,
time,
man.
I guess. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Mike. Thank you so much. And I want to thank all the people that support independent musicians that have supported this show since 2008. I really appreciate it. Really have a good time doing it. Thanks, Mike. Take care, buddy. And we'll talk to you later. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
All right, John. Bye.
Bye.